Save big money on everything for your next project at Menards. Spring is here, making it the perfect time for outdoor projects. Suncast storage sheds are an excellent solution for protecting outdoor lawn and gardening tools. They're easy to assemble, and the all-weather construction provides water resistance and UV protection. Save big on Suncast storage sheds. View our selection of Suncast products today in-store and on Menards.com. Save big money at Menards.
Hello, I'm Tom Butler.
I'm Brendan Duffy.
And I'm Tom Wheatley.
And you're listening to the James Bond A to Z podcast.
Join us as three lifelong 007 fans go on a journey of discovery.
We're on a mission to discover everything we can about cinema's greatest spy films.
By learning about the people who made them, in front of the camera and behind.
The James Bond A to Z podcast is in no way affiliated with James Bond, Eon, or the Fleming Estate. We've researched each episode as extensively as we can, but our information does come from a range of sources. We do our best to make sure the information is accurate, but sometimes we can get it wrong. If you want to correct us on something or add some more detail, email us at podcast@jamesbondatoz.co.uk.
Welcome back to the James Bond A to Z podcast. This is the second part of our Daniel Craig special. It's last episode we explored his life and career up to making Casino Royale, and then his sort of film career after that. Did we end on the one with the polar bears? What was that? His Dark Materials, Golden Compass.
Golden Compass, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
The one with the polar bears.
What a cliffhanger to end on.
What happens next?
What happens next? Well, on this episode, we will be covering his career after that, right up to and including No Time to Die. As always with the actor specials, it's worth noting that the films themselves get special episodes. So where we skirted over Casino Royale last time, it's because there's a Casino Royale episode and you can listen to that. Similarly, on this one, we'll be talking about Quantum of Solace, Skyfall, Spectre, and No Time to Die. And in due course, they will have their own episodes. So again, if it feels like we're skirting over these films, that is what is going on. You guys excited? Pumped?
Massively.
Yeah, big time.
So on with the show, and we will talk about Mr. Daniel Craig, the sixth James Bond film actor. So in 2008, Daniel Craig made and starred in Quantum of Solace. What are your guys' thoughts on Quantum of Solace?
Pretty terrible, really.
Yeah, it's... Yeah. I think I've told you this before, it was the only Bond film I've ever walked out of in the cinema.
Wow, what was it that prompted you to walk out?
Well, I was getting a flight from Amsterdam, and I looked at my watch and I thought, I've got the choice of watching the last 40 minutes of Quantum of Solace or getting a McDonald's. And popped it for the McDonald's at that point.
But you've seen it since.
Yeah, only a couple of times.
Yeah, it's it's not. I mean, it wasn't. It got decent reviews when it was released. It wasn't. I think in the fullness of time, it has dimmed in the sort of the memories of many Bond fans. It's a bit of a messy film, and we'll go into reasons of that. But let's just take it back a step. Quantum of Solace was conceived as being a continuation of Casino Royale. That film obviously itself was a huge hit. And it was originally, Quantum of Solace was going to be directed by Roger Mitchell, who had directed Daniel in The Mother and Enduring Love. But Roger Mitchell actually pulled out of the film, talking about what his plan for Quantum of Solace was. That he said it was going to be a multi-city quest that went from Italy to Bombay to Berlin to Istanbul. And he had a bad guy in the film, which he had figured out a way to bring the internet down, and then that would send the world into meltdown. And actually, Roger Mitchell met with Martin Campbell on the set of Casino Royale while they were making that film to discuss the sequel. So it was they were already thinking two steps ahead. But Roger Mitchell pulled out. He said, "We just started running out of road. I started to realise that we were going to have to start to go into prep on this film without a script, and I suddenly started to see a world of pain ahead of me as a director." So he just basically couldn't find a way to make it work without having a script in place. So actually, when he pulled out, they delayed the film from May to November. And before shooting, Daniel Craig said, we have to make the next one, I think, better than the last one to keep people happy. And he, at that point, he said that the script had not been finished. So when the film was announced to press in 2006, they obviously announced the title. Do you remember this, when they announced the title of the film?
Yeah, Adam and Joe did a big thing about it, didn't they?
Yeah, that was very funny. Yeah, worth checking that out if you can find the archives of Adam and Joe talking about that. Obviously, it's taken from a Fleming short story. But talking about the title at the press conference, Daniel Craig said, "It has grown on me. It doesn't trip off the tongue, but then why should it?" So the film itself was shot at Pinewood and on location in Italy, Austria, Chile and Peru. But unfortunately, the film was completely hamstrung by the writer's strike that was going on in America. So Paul Haggis, who had been drafted in to work on the script after it had been written by Purvis and Wade, Paul Haggis said it was a few drafts away from being shootable. The initial script had just about been completed, and so Mark Forster, when he was going to shoot this film, was unable to bring any more writers on board to finish the script. So basically, they started the film without a finished script, and then there was just chaos behind the scenes, and that just sort of filters through into the film. And the two people that ended up writing the script on the set, or at least trying to fix the script issues that were there, were Mark Forster and Daniel Craig. And this is a quote from Daniel Craig: "We were effed. We had the bare bones of a script. Me and the director were the ones allowed to rewrite it. The rules were that you couldn't employ anyone as a writer, but the actor and director could work on scenes together. I say to myself, never again, but who knows? There was me trying to rewrite scenes, and a writer I am not." So this is the first one where, you know, Daniel Craig's contributing to the script. So they're really tight deadline to make this film as well. It started without a script, and they had only had 6 weeks to edit the film afterwards, rather than the usual sort of 12 to 14 weeks. But Daniel, you know, he worked really hard on the film. He was up at 5, then in makeup, then on set, shoot for 12 hours, and then he'd finish, go to the gym, do stunt practice, have dinner, and he would do that 6 days a week for 6 months. And sometimes he said he'd go out on a Saturday night, get shit-faced and sleep it off on the Sunday. So, yeah, not much else to say about this, rather before we, you know, get to the Quantum of Solace episode. But he did have a cut to his face during shooting, and this is quite a recurring thing for Daniel, getting injured on the sets of these films. But he cut his face, and he also had an injury on his hand, and there are press photos of him attending events and he's got his arm in a sling. But talking about the film, he said, "I was at a stage in my career in which things were going pretty well. I was making plenty of money, relatively speaking, enough to live on. But when this opportunity came along, I knew it would turn everything upside down. It wasn't about the money. It was about changing things up and seeing what would happen." But the flip side of that for him was that he couldn't go out and without being recognised. And that is something that he considered, you know, to be a royal pain in the arse for him. So I think he was really starting to feel the regrets that he'd predicted he might get before he signed up. One interesting thing to note, though, is that this was the first time Daniel got to do the gun barrel sequence, because the previous film didn't have one. And he said that was the first time while playing James Bond that he actually felt scared. He said, "We did that one twice. We filmed it twice. I did it over and over again. I watched on the monitor, and I think we got it right. There were ideas to mess around and make it more graphic and things, and I was just like, no, it just has to be what, like with the old ones." So yeah, so that's Quantum of Solace. And like I said, that film was released to reasonable reviews. It didn't do as well at the box office as the previous ones, and I think that's indicative of, it's not a film that really bared repeat viewings at the cinema as a film like Casino Royale had. So yeah, that's Quantum of Solace, the film.
And released on the same day was Quantum of Solace, the game. So it was a first-person shooter, and it's the last one to have been released, the last movie tie-in to have been released, because they haven't done one for the subsequent films. And so this was released on all the formats that you would imagine: PlayStation,
2 even, so the previous generation, PlayStation 3, Xbox, Wii, and the PC, with a completely new title track as well, so it didn't have... what's the title of the
Another Way
song?
To Die?
Another Way to Die, yeah. It had a song called When Nobody Loves You, and it used the opening... You know, the car chase at the beginning of the actual film, it used that as the pre-credits, the credits sequence. It featured the storyline of both Casino Royale and Quantum of Solace. And it was made by Activision, so they'd acquired the franchise. So before that, I think we've talked about some of the games prior to this, it was made by EA. But Activision had just got this new license, and... So this was the first one they released, and it uses the engine of Call of Duty 4. It's basically a Call of Duty 4 game reskinned with all the Bond music and the characters. And it's the first one to feature Daniel Craig's likeness. Also features Judi Dench, Eva Green, Mads Mikkelsen, Olga Kurylenko, and Matthew Amalric. So they all play their roles that they did in the films within the game as well, with a full facial capture. And the producer on the team at Treyarch, that's the name of the company that produced it, said, "We also took photographs and 3D scans of the major actors and recorded hours of their voice for the game. It was great to meet these guys, and they're all very supportive of our vision and goals with the game." So they did actually originally struggle getting Daniel Craig to sign up. So they'd signed everyone else up but Daniel Craig. So voice actor David Houston was cast in the role of James Bond. As you can see, this is, you know, be quite problematic. The main character is the only one not officially licensed. So Treyarch had a meeting with Daniel Craig, and the co-design director, Adam Gascoigne, said... Daniel Craig was actually the most reluctant. He's a big gamer himself and didn't want a poorly made licensed game. So he sat him down and let him play an early build. He loved it, and he came back to him and said, "Okay, I'll do it." And then he was very important of making the game what it is. We tried to get him to give us feedback as much as possible. He's obviously a very busy man. We'd send script drafts for him to check over. So he was involved with that aspect too. So that's quite interesting that you've got the main guy, you know, fully involved. And I think it helps that he's a gamer himself. And he doesn't want to... Yeah, I mean, there's licensed games, film tie-ins, very largely are disappointing. Probably something that holds the Bond into Bond video games back is how successful and how well GoldenEye did.
Yeah,
it's something that people still mention now, don't they, with every release of a new Bond video game. And I'm sure moving forward with the new one that's being released, that
but oddly GoldenEye was a fluke. It was never meant to be good. Everyone expected it to be kind of just a cheap tie-in, but that was the one that stuck.
Yeah,
I think that's why they probably don't hook them on the films anymore. It's almost like a kiss of death, isn't it, when they hook them onto the game.
And I've got high hopes for this new one.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's jump back into Craig's filmography. Probably should point out here that I have not watched many of these films. So,
okay.
If you know more than me, or you've seen any of these films, please shout. Although I'm guessing you probably haven't seen a lot of these. So first one I've got here is Flashbacks of a Fool, 2008 film. Anyone seen that?
No.
So it's a British drama film. It stars Craig as, he's like a big time Hollywood actor. And he's a bit of a, he's not a very nice man. He's a bit up himself. He's rich. He's people don't really like him very much, but he finds out that his childhood best friend has died. So it turns into a story of him going back home to... he misses the funeral, but he goes back home, and it's him reminiscing over his life and reflecting over what he's become and all these things. Looks quite good. Looks quite quite a deep film. I've never actually heard of it before researching this. Didn't do very well. It got Rotten Tomatoes. It's got a 38% approval rating, an average rating of 4.5. And the site consensus for it is, one of the reviews said, despite Daniel Craig's earnest efforts, Flashbacks of a Fool suffers from an ambitious but underdeveloped script. There you go. That's Flashbacks of a Fool. Then there's Defiance, also released in 2008, which is a war film directed by Edward Zwick. It's all about the occupation of Belarus in Nazi Germany. It's based on a book by a Nekama Tech. I've never heard of it. And it's, it looks quite juicy. It's all about these kind of Jewish brothers who save a load of, Jewish people. Recruited a load of Jewish people in Belarus during the Second World War and kind of end up fighting. It's basically a war film, but looks really good. It's got Daniel Craig in it, Lee Schreiber.
I have seen that one.
Sorry?
I have seen that one. That's good.
Is it good? Yeah, Daniel Craig, Lee Schreiber and Zeus Belsky. Oh, and Jamie Bell.
Made
52 million worldwide, so not too bad. But it received a nomination for the Academy Award in the category of Best Original Score and Golden Globe for Best Original Score as well. Rotten Tomatoes have given it a 58% critics rating. 58% of critics gave the film a positive review. Metacritic average score of 58 out of 100, so pretty consistent numbers across the board there. Then we've got Steady Rain, which is a play from 2007, which was Craig's Broadway debut. And it's a play by Keith Huff, who I don't know much about. And it's about two Chicago policemen who take a Vietnamese boy supposedly back to his uncle. But it turns out that the person they take it back to is a serial killer. And the kid ends up dying. I don't think that's a big spoiler because it happens at the start of the film. And the whole film is about the pair of them. Sorry, the film. The whole play is about the pair of them kind of discussing how that's affected them, who bears the responsibility, and all this kind of stuff about the situation. And it stars Hugh Jackman as well. So him and Hugh Jackman take the two main roles in it. Got generally very good critical reception. The play alternates between separate monologues between the two actors. So it's quite a tour de force play. I think it's quite a critical one when it comes down to Broadway style. Chicago Tribune called the play a gritty, rich, thick, poetic and entirely gripping noir tale. Time magazine said both stars were excellent, but they were wonderfully served by Huff's tout, tough-minded script, which takes potentially cliched material, the moral challenges faced by cops on the urban mean streets, and makes it fresh and compelling. So sounds like a good job for Craig there.
Some interesting pronunciations there.
Yeah, I think I read that a bit too quick and didn't quite. That's fine. Any readers who want to correct my mispronunciation, please go ahead. You get a sticker.
I think it's taut rather than tout.
Yes, I realised that. Yes. What did I say? Tout.
Tout. And the Chicago Tribune. I thought that was quite a nice one as well.
That'll do me. I'll take that one.
That'll do. Yeah, I guess Broadway debut, I mean, that really sort of gives you an indication of where Daniel Craig is at in his career now. Like, Bond has really launched him onto a new level. Like, we were talking about last time, he was making Golden Compass. He's like proper Hollywood blockbusters now. This is not the actor who was starring in all those random films that we were talking about before. This is an A-list star. Mm. And nothing shouts more A-list star than starring in a David Fincher film. Like, David Fincher is considered like one of Hollywood's greatest working directors. And so in 2011, Daniel Craig starred in David Fincher's English language adaptation of the Stieg Larsson book, The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo. He played the journalist Mikael Blomkvist and Rooney Mara was Lisbeth Salander. You guys seen this one?
Yeah.
Nope.
But one thing that I always think about with this film and with Daniel Craig is the opening, the title sequence. It's got that amazing Led Zeppelin cover by Oh, what's his name? Nine Inch Nails guy. Oh, I can't remember what his name is. Trent Reznor, that's it. He's done that, and it's very Bond-esque. It's got like floating bodies and all that sort of stuff. It's the most Bondy thing that you can say about this film is the title sequence. But anyway, about signing on for the film, Daniel Craig said it was already a good story, but the combination of David as director and Steve's alien script made it incredibly exciting for me. I had confidence in the material and confidence in their visual ideas. Obviously, he's playing Swedish in this film because it's set in Sweden. But instead of doing a Swedish accent, he just did a very sort of plain English accent. He said, I went for something plain. David and I talked about it. And we both didn't want an accent to get in the way of the character. Really, many Swedes speak incredibly good English, both with and without accents. And I felt that that was the way to go. And another thing that he did for the film was he got out of shape. He was obviously in shape to play Bond. He got out of shape to play Michael Blomqvist. He said, I was so fit when I started filming that David Fincher used to send me bowls of pasta and bottles of wine. He said, you don't look like a journalist. You're moving like an action hero. So it's taken me 6 months to stick a stomach on and 6 months to get rid of it. Nightmare. That title sequence, like I said, very Bond-like, actually done by Deadpool director Tim Miller. Mm-hmm. So he was a visual effects artist before becoming a film director. That film got very good reviews and grossed $232 million at the box office globally, $232 million. Yeah, and Roger Ebert said, in this film, Daniel Craig brings along the confidence of James Bond. How could he not? He looks too comfortable in danger. There is one thing that Daniel Craig does in this film, which is always makes me laugh when I think about it. There's this really weird thing with his glasses. Do you remember this, Brendan? Like, he's like clearly not a person that wears glasses in real life, and there's times where he takes his glasses off. I mean, this is a visual thing, and he like wears them like this, like underneath his chin, so they're like just hanging off his face, and it just doesn't look like someone who's ever worn glasses ever in their life. Anyway, that's my criticism of Daniel Craig in that film. Also in 2011, Daniel Craig starred in Dream House, which was a psychological thriller directed by Jim Sheridan, famous Irish director. And it also starred Rachel Weisz and Naomi Watts. Now, this is where, obviously, the romance with Rachel Weisz comes about, but I'll leave that for a minute. This film itself is about a young family who move into a house, but they discover that some murders had taken place there some years ago. And I'm not giving away spoilers here because this was all in the trailer for the film. It turns out that a guy who'd lived there had murdered his family. So Daniel Craig is the guy, and he then investigates the murder and finds out that he was actually the murderer itself, and that his wife and his kids are just a fantasy, and he's got to reckon with the murders of his family. So that he killed his family, basically. Spoilers. But that trailer gives away that twist. It's crap. I mean, why would you put that in the trailer?
Maybe there's another twist.
Yeah.
Maybe he is just a normal murderer.
Maybe he is. So on Rotten Tomatoes, the film has an approval rating of 6%. That is six single digits.
That's a good number, isn't it?
And the critical consensus says Dreamhouse is punishingly slow, stuffy, and way too obvious to be scary. But like I said, they filmed it in Canada. Him and Rachel Weisz became romantically involved, despite her being in a relationship with the director, Darren Aronofsky.
2011... really was the year of Daniel Craig. Got some more 2011 here. He was quite prolific in, you know, if we were a cinema goer in 2011.
Well, he was certainly busy. Watching it.
Yeah, very busy. Cowboys and Aliens.
Now we're talking.
Was another release. So it's a comic book adaptation. He played a character called Jake Lonergan, who is an outlaw who's wanted. And he ends up in a town in the Wild West. It's set in 1873 during an alien invasion. So it does what it says on the tin, cowboys and aliens. And this was big budget, directed by Jon Favreau, co-starring Harrison Ford and Olivia Wilde. And $160 million budget, and only made $174 million at the box office.
Ouch. So,
yeah. Originally, the character that Craig ended up playing was meant to be Robert Downey Jr., but he left the project to go and star in Sherlock Holmes, Game of Shadows. So
probably a good choice.
Yeah, out of the two. I would say so, yeah. So the director clearly was a fan of Craig's portrayal of Bond, because he said, on one hand, he's like this Jason Bourne type, a leading man who's also a lethal character, but on the other hand, he's got a humanity and vulnerability to him. So I guess that is one of the things that would have got him the part, and the fact that he was huge at this point as well.
Sounds like he's given the script writing for Cowboys... Is it Versus? Cowboys Versus Aliens, a little bit too much credit.
No, it's
there.
And. Cowboys and Aliens.
Cowboys, is it Cowboys and Aliens?
It's And.
I don't think it matters, does it? Nobody's going to search for it. Google's not having to answer that question very often.
So, Daniel Craig said, the title, Cowboys and Aliens, is what it is. But it's just one gag. And the gag is that aliens come down in cowboy times. But once you tell that gag, it's over. So we decided to tell a story. A journey of redemption, the journey of two characters that have to redeem themselves with a backdrop of this sort of crazy thing.
I always get it mixed up with Wild Wild West. That's a similar concept, isn't it?
It came out, what is it, like the year before John Carter as well, to another incredibly boring, drab film. This is, I remember seeing this at the cinema and just being like, what? Harrison Ford's in this as well, isn't he?
Yeah.
I don't know what you think. When you see a script like this, probably any actor's thinking, this is going to be big, it's going to be a new trilogy, it's going to be massive.
Mm.
But, as soon as you see that title and just see a bit of what happens in it, you'd think it's probably not actually going to be that good.
Craig said, the chance to actually get on a horse every day and just put a hat on and put the gun on and the spurs, that was a boyhood dream. I was just going, I'm an Englishman playing a cowboy, a lead in a cowboy movie. I need all the help I can get. I would figure Harrison Ford would be the man to help me out. And Harrison was sat next to him when he said that and just said, it's all in the hat. So,
yeah.
That's great advice there.
That's the latest Indiana Jones film we'll attest to.
So, 2011, another film for Craig. And this time it's The Adventures of Tintin. Directed by Steven Spielberg. And it was a dual role. He played Ivan Ivanovich Sakharin and his ancestor, Red Rackham. So have you both seen this?
Yeah, great film.
Yeah, I think it's been on in the room at Christmas or something. I don't think I've actively sat down and watched it intentionally.
Yeah. I didn't mind it. It didn't sort of kick in, did it? The franchise didn't seem to...
Well, it was because it's produced by Peter Jackson, isn't it? So Steven Spielberg was going to do the first one. Peter Jackson was going to do the second one. And then they were going to do... Yeah. I don't know what we're going to do with the third
stars
one.
Stars in it as well, isn't it? It was tour de
Jamie
force.
Bell, Peg
Jamie
and Frost.
Did it. Yeah. Simon Pegg, Nick Frost. Yeah.
Because I think, didn't Joe Cornish do some script writing on it as well?
Joe Cornish
and
did
Edgar
some
Wright.
Script writing. Edgar Wright. Yeah. Yep. So it's got a lot of talent. And you know. So the budget was $135 million and it made $374 million. So it was relatively okay. I mean, it's probably not what they were hoping.
Yeah.
Nowhere near. Especially with, you know, Europe is mad for Tintin. You would rest, you know, you'd want a lot of your income to come from Europe, but just didn't seem to happen for whatever reason. But funnily, a little in the premiere for this, he was asked a question by a journalist. Has it always been a dream to be in a Steven Spielberg movie? And he said, I've been in one before. In fact, I've been in two Steven Spielberg movies. I've done Road to Perdition, which he produced, and I did one called Munich. So, yeah. Prior to that, he'd been asked by another journalist what annoys him about journalists. So, and then that was the next question afterwards.
Wow.
Awkward.
Very awkward.
Wasn't you, was it, brother?
No. It was not me.
But that's online if you just want to look at it. You can see instantly gets annoyed, as you would. You know, it's poor research, isn't it?
All right, well, back away from the films now, although only slightly. Rachel Weisz, his current wife, which is an interesting, quite a long story. And to be honest, I'm not going to go into too much depth because, as I said about the previous relationship he had with Satsuki Mitchell, this is just loads and loads of articles, hello, and the Mirror and all these kind of things. So researching it is a nightmare to actually find out any details. And also, as a pair, both Rachel Weisz and Craig are very private. So they keep their personal life completely separate. And they talk about this in interviews and stuff, how they have it completely separate. When they close the door to the house, they're not getting involved with the media or anything like that. But they met originally, as we said earlier, in 1994. And that was in a play called Les Grandes Horizontales, which was at the National Theatre Studio. And
yeah, we talked about that in the last episode.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, yeah. So that was when they originally met. They weren't an item then, or they weren't officially an item then, although various things suggest otherwise. But they didn't begin dating officially and properly again until December 2010, as they were both cast in The Dream House, as we've just said. And at the time, both of them had just finished quite long relationships. We know that Craig had finished his relationship with Satsuki Mitchell, and then Weisz had a 9-year relationship with Darren Aronofsky. And there's various talks about how the time or references in articles about it being a very quick move on from moving to dating Rachel Weisz from Satsuki Mitchell. At the time, neither of them had been married, so Rachel Weisz talks quite a lot about how, even though she had a 9-year relationship and didn't get married, she'd had a child with Dan Aronofsky, but she never got married. But when she met Craig, it was a very quick turnaround. They got married pretty quickly after meeting up again and starting a relationship. She said, "I never thought I would get married. It was not an ambition of mine. It was the opposite. I couldn't relate to romantic comedies. Marriage seems to be the whole point of them. Then it just happened, happily, at a more mature moment." Which is quite nice. Seemed to coincide at the right time. They had a really private wedding. There's hardly anyone there. They had a daughter in 2018, which is their first child together. So they've both got their own... each girl's got one child, and they've got another child together. And they're still married now.
So with Skyfall still a little while away, I think they wanted to get that film into production sooner than it was, but it was on hiatus because of MGM's financial troubles. So in 2010, Bond fans, rather than having a new film to get excited about, they had two new video games to get excited about, both starring Daniel Craig. The first one, he starred in a remake of the GoldenEye video game, GoldenEye 007. This was developed by Eurocom and published by Activision for the Nintendo Wii. And it was released on the same day as another James Bond game called Bloodstone, which I've played and enjoyed. So GoldenEye 007 is set between Quantum of Solace and Skyfall. Is that right? No, I'm going to take that back. Hang on. So with the 007, the GoldenEye game, the developer said there is only ever one James Bond, and at the moment that is Daniel Craig. So by default, Bond plays in GoldenEye. Daniel plays Bond in GoldenEye 007 Reloaded, as it was called. Everyone at Eurocom is a huge fan of Craig's Bond. So obviously it's a remake of the Pierce Brosnan game, but it stars Daniel Craig because he's the Bond of note at that point. Michael G. Wilson, talking about the game, said, "When we first pitched the game to Daniel, he was really excited about it. He thought the original game was great. Daniel plays a lot of games and gives us a lot of good criticism. We'll show him what the plan is and he'll suggest changes and get very hands-on." David Arnold, who we've talked about many, many episodes ago, he composed the score for the game. Mm-hmm. And Nicole Scherzinger performs the title song GoldenEye, which is a cover of the film's theme song, which was originally performed by Tina Turner. You've heard this now, Brendan and Wheatley.
Yeah.
Bizarre, isn't it?
Yeah. A strange thing to do.
I'm not sure why they've got her to do a Tina Turner impression.
No, it's very strange.
Yeah.
But they also hired Bruce Feirstein, who was the co-writer of GoldenEye, to write the script for this game as well. It's not as wasn't as well received by the critics as the original Nintendo 64 version, but it had positive reviews. I remember playing it and thinking it was okay.
I played it last week.
Ah, really?
Yeah, I went home and I stuck it on the Wii.
Ah.
But yeah, it's not. It just it misses the point. Like the beauty of the original GoldenEye just doesn't have it. It's just a little bit dull. And also the Wii's just not well designed for games like that. It's just really annoying to control.
So there was an enhanced port of the game titled GoldenEye 007 Reloaded, and that was released in November the next year in 2011 for the Xbox 360 and PlayStation 3. So the other game, Bloodstone, that was a third-person shooter video game developed by Bizarre and published by Activision again, and this came out on PC, DS, PS3 and Xbox 360. And it was the first James Bond game to have an original story since Everything or Nothing, the 2004 game. Stars Daniel Craig, he does the voice, it's based on his likeness. It also has Judi Dench and Joss Stone in it. Again, Bruce Feirstein wrote the story. Ben Cook, who is Daniel Craig's stunt double, provided motion capture for Bond's digital animation, and he's credited as the game's stunt coordinator. So then we move into 2012, the 50th anniversary of the James Bond franchise.
And what a way to celebrate, with the coinciding with the 2012 Olympics. We have talked about this in the Danny Boyle episode.
Yeah.
Because he directed Happy and Glorious, which was the short film shown in the opening ceremony of the London 2012 Olympics. And it's just a short thing where Bond escorts the Queen to the ceremony. And the Queen plays herself and Daniel Craig plays Bond. And it ends up with them jumping from the helicopter into the stadium with Union Jack parachutes. And for the jump, obviously, the Queen didn't do the jump. And neither did Craig. It was by stuntman Mark Sutton and Gary Connery. That's good to remember. Gary Connery, he played the Queen. So Daniel Craig spoke about it. He said it wasn't supposed to be funny. It was supposed to be serious. She was fun, incredibly game. We had a short space of time, and I was a bit grumpy as it was my day off, and suddenly I'm at the palace with the Queen at a private chamber. And she improvises a little bit. She was supposed to be sitting at the desk, and she asked if she could write, so she pretended to write. Don't know if we said that quote before, but I thought it's quite nice.
Don't think we did.
It's only short, so it's worth digging out if you want to watch it online.
I can't remember what I said about it previously, but thinking about it when doing this, I think it's just that was just a perfect little thing, wasn't it? That's how Bond should be used. It's a smart way to use Bond without being tacky or, you know, making it a bit boring. It's just a very nice, simple way, and he doesn't do a lot in it, does he? He's not really about him.
No,
I just think it's quite nice.
But so well judged. It just really captured the whole. I mean, the whole opening ceremony is fantastic, absolutely fantastic. But yeah, that is the way to use the character outside of the films. Yeah, definitely. Mm. Also in 2012, Daniel Craig guest presented Saturday Night Live.
There we go.
For anyone who doesn't know what Saturday Night Live is, it's a it's an American sketch comedy show. That's probably the best way to describe it. So season 38, episode 3, he guest presented, and each episode gets reviewed by vulture.com. they review it, and he said his limited comedic ability was hard to disguise. But they do go on to say that the writing didn't help. And I watched most of the sketches from this, and it's poor. it really is poor. And while I broadly agree with what Vulture say about his comedic ability, the writing is weak. Very weak.
But it normally is.
I always think it's just... terrible on Saturday Night Live. It's very rare that I see a sketch and think, oh, that's actually quite good.
But this is the thing, that Saturday Night Live, it used to be so good. It used to be the basis of like most people who were really good at the start of their career in the 80s. It was like phenomenal like place for people to start off. And some of the sketches you can still watch now and they're brilliant. But it seemed to have... I think the Daniel Craig episodes are a sign of this. It's like... It's saying, oh, we're going to limit the comedy just to get a famous person in and base a show around a famous person. And it just, yeah, I've got to talk about this in a minute, so I'll hold off.
But yeah, I was just really surprised. I don't watch it, and I'm not no intention to. But
it's just to promote the film at the time, isn't it? It's just a way of promoting a new film coming out, because there's so many people watch it. But
the episode was broadcast on October the 6th, 2012, so that's 3 weeks before.
Yeah,
the release of Skyfall.
So, Skyfall, the biggest film ever in the Bond series in when it comes to actual making money. It made $1.1 billion globally, dollars, when it came out. The cast was announced on 3rd of November 2011. So, as you can imagine at the time, after Quantum of Solace, it was quite a big deal to get this film right, because I think we've spoken about this before, how with the Bond series... if one goes wrong, you've got to make the next one right. You can't have two bad ones in a row. So they get the effort to make one after a bit of a dud, and I would probably class Quantum as a bit of a dud, is really high. So obviously Craig came back and he said in an interview that he was lucky to have the chance to do it. But and they got Mendes in to direct. And obviously he's already got a link to Craig in the fact that they worked on Road to Perdition together. But interestingly, Craig talks about the reason that Mendes came in to direct. And he says it was largely based on an after party they had, which was from the stage show he did with Hugh Jackman. So they went to an after party after the stage show. And he says, it's a very showbiz story. I was at Hugh Jackman's house in New York, and it was after the Steady Rain party. It was a soiree. We were in a play together and Sam was there. I'd had a few too many drinks, and I went, how do you fancy directing a Bond? And he kind of looked at me and he went, yeah. And it snowballed from there. But there's a lot of references to the fact that Mendes didn't necessarily want to do that Bond film. He took a bit of convincing to do it. He's a big director, Mendes, and he's obviously done some amazing stuff. So it sounds like he was a little bit sceptical about doing it, and it took a bit of convincing for him to do it. But obviously it came off really well, and it not just the money. I think Skyfall is a fantastic Bond film, and I put that down as my one that I would show to people if I was going to say, this is the first Bond film you're going to watch. This is a good example of, you know, the series and what you should be doing. Because I think it all does come into place really nicely and it works really well. There are issues in it, which we'll talk through in the Skyfall episode. But Mendes talked about Craig's Bond. And there's a big focus on Craig in this film and his character being multidimensional and having lots of different elements to his character and having a depth to him. He says he has a combination of lassitude, boredom, depression, and difficulty with what he's chosen to do for a living. He says that Craig's casting performance in Casino Royale, which was one of the main reasons that he decided to do Skyfall, as being what he felt the Bond franchise needed. But one of the main issues that they talked about, because they worked on this together, they knew each other quite well. They sounded like they were quite good friends, so they had quite a lot of input together into the making of this. And they talk about how they wanted the franchise to be based in the real world instead of being fantastical and all over the place. So Skyfall obviously was slightly inspired by Julian Assange, Spectre was based on Edward Snowden. So various things that they said about this. And Mendes was anxious to correct the, and he says, kind of nostalgic, jingoistic, pre-Cold War idea of what Britain was, and talking about the older films. It felt right that it was Daniel because he seemed like a contemporary Bond and like a realist, like a person who actually walked on the street. The truth is, there is something wounded and hurt about him. And Craig confided that he was trying to play Bond in the film as if he was, I don't quite understand it. He says he was burning up. Really, no other actor would have attempted to play Bond in that way, Mendes said. That sense in which he is incendiary. It kind of goes on a bit. And this bit I actually thought was quite interesting. He talks about, you know, the bit at the start where he takes off the top of the train with a digger and he drops into the carriage. There's a bit where he straightens his cuffs when he's done that. And they talk about it and he says it wasn't in the script. And Craig says, I realise why that came in. Mendes says, I realise why that came in, why he did it. Because he's scared. He's effing terrified. He's just jumped off the back of the train. He's just like, everything is fine. So it's like a moment to just redress himself. He's not trying to be cool. He's trying to calm himself down because it's realism. And they talk a bit about this in an interview. And it's interesting because if Roger Moore had done that, it would just be him being cool, wouldn't it? Oh, yeah, I'm fine. Yeah, yeah, that's me. Or like Brosnan when he's doing his tie under the on the boat. But in this sense, it's actually because he's trying to calm himself down because he's stressed and he's in a bad situation. So I thought that was quite an interesting way of like a little analogy of Craig's Bond. He also said about that scene, anyone else doing that, it would have been a cliche, and somehow he manages to make it real. That's Craig's art. It's very difficult to achieve, finding a way to reimagine those things so they feel real again. It takes unbelievable willpower to do that. So the response was obviously very good to the film. Roger Ebert, he says that Daniel Craig takes full possession of a role he earlier played well in Casino Royale, not so well in Quantum. Other things that people said is Craig manages to get out of the shadow of Sean Connery. It's a defining performance for a great actor. Craig has developed an authoritative Bond persona, dry and intelligent, and he's relaxed into Bond without losing any steelness, which I think is all quite accurate. And certainly for me, I mean, Casino Royale, I would say, is his best Bond film, but I think Skyfall is right up there, and it's not necessarily better in, you know, like a perfect Bond film way, but it's a very good film. And I think Craig's probably, you know, by far one of his best Bond appearances.
I think I would put this on over Casino Royale, to be honest. I love Skyfall. I just think it's fantastic.
He's definitely, I think Craig's probably better in it. I think for me, the Casino Royale film is just a little bit neater and a little bit cleaner. But I just like the fact that Skyfall is also standalone as well, which makes it...
Yeah, makes sense in and of itself,
or,
doesn't it?
Yeah. Or seemingly standalone until we get to Spectre.
being the 50th year of James Bond, the marketing machine goes into overdrive. So not only has Daniel Craig done Saturday Night Live, the Olympics, he's made the film as well. He also stars in a couple of high profile ads to support the partners of Skyfall. First one of those is for Heineken. He stars in a 60 second Heineken advert called Crack the Case alongside Berenice Marlowe, who played Severine in the film. So Heineken has been a partner of the James Bond films since Tomorrow Never Dies, actually. But it's really in the Daniel Craig era where it steps up a notch. And it's actually the first film that you see him drinking it is Skyfall. And then he does the same in Spectre. So this 60-second advert, Crack the Case, ran globally. And it was by the brand agency Weyden and Kennedy Amsterdam. It was directed by a Dutch filmmaker called Mattis van Heiningen Jr. Imagine he's Dutch. And he also directed the 2011 remake of The Thing. This advert was shot at Shepperton Studios, and it sees Bond boarding a train in the middle of some snowy Eastern European town, and another man gets on the train at the same time who gets mistaken for Bond, and this other guy gets chased through the train. He's battling all these bad guys. There's a funny bit where he interrupts some guards and they're building a card tower, and it looks like the train from GoldenEye. There's a bit also where someone delivers room service to a room on the train, and it's Dr. No, and he's giving this Dr. No some lobster. And it's actually, you know, Joseph, is it Joseph Wiseman plays Dr. No?
Yeah.
And then when the man finally catches up with Bond and Severine, they're at the bar and they give him a Heineken and also an attaché case, which has like a flashing light on it. And then people who'd watched the advert were then invited to play a follow-up game on Facebook. Remember Facebook games? They were all the rage in the
early... Still do them, can't you?
I don't know. Do they still do them?
I think they're still there. They just pop up occasionally.
So, yeah, Berenice Marlowe then, like, invites people to crack the code, and there's a series of, like, Facebook games that people are then play. And they also took this advert to London's Victoria Station, Victoria Train Station, for a live activation, as they call it in the advertising world. And passers-by could then go in and crack the code, and it was all James Bond themed. The other one that Daniel Craig starred in was an advert for Sony products, and that was called Intelligence Gathered. And there's two versions of that, 60 seconds and 30 seconds. And you see James Daniel Craig as 007 trying to infiltrate a heavily guarded control room. And like, you see all the Sony devices being used, Bravias, Veo laptops, Xperia tablets, smartphones, all the devices that you see in Skyfall. And then when he finally gets into the control room, he says to the lady, "Expecting someone?" And she just looks shocked. And again, that was by Vyden and Kennedy Amsterdam. They're just two sort of interesting side notes in there. They're Daniel Craig as James Bond, but in adverts. He does appear in
other
adverts.
I don't remember either of them. I've got to watch them now.
Yeah, they're not that great. He's very, very, only very slightly in them. Like, it's very much a top and tail. He's probably done like a day's work, if that.
No Diet Coke advert with Piers Brosnan.
No. Or Lark cigarettes. So, yeah, that was him doing his corporate bit.
Time to tread the boards again in 2013. This time with his wife, Rachel Weisz. And he starred in a play called Betrayal. It's Harold Pinter play from the 70s, and it ran from October 2013 to January 2014. Found a few reviews, fair to middling, some negative. It's quite mixed, but having said that, it grossed $17.5 million.
Blimey.
I know, right? Yeah. It was the second highest earning Broadway play of 2013. So it's, you know, there was tickets being touted for almost $1,000.
I didn't even know plays made that much money.
It's Broadway, isn't it? So absolutely phenomenal. Huge. So it's a story of an affair, and it's played out backwards in time. And the lovers share a drink, and it goes back to where they first experienced their first meet. And Daniel Craig said about it, "When you have someone as good as Pinter, it remains timeless and the themes are timeless. It's just good writing." What's interesting about the play is it's very intense, and a very intense thing to do, but we managed to go home and just sort of leave it there at work. So he's referring to the fact that he's in a play with his wife, and they managed to keep it separate, which they had to, because, you know, it became way too much for them. But they also did their interviews separately as well, interestingly. So they didn't do any interviews together regarding the promotion of it, or discussing it or talking about it.
Well, a smart move.
Yeah. But yeah, that was Betrayal.
So what else has he been up to? Well, do you both know what the Invictus Games are?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm the least sports knowledgeable person around this table, virtual table. But yeah, Invictus Games, it's a sporting event based around like wounded, injured, and sick servicemen men and women, both serving and veterans. And apparently the phrase means unconquered, which I didn't know either. But they were founded by Prince Harry, and the inspiration came apparently from his visit to the Warrior Games over in the USA. First one took place in 2014 at the Queen Elizabeth Olympic Park. As part of that, they made a video that was promoting the games. And it had loads of famous people in it, like Tom Hardy, Will.i.am was in it, Joanna Lumley, Stephen Fry, they all speak on it. And what they do is there's like a poem by a guy called William Ernest Henley, who it's a 16-line poem. And that's kind of like the poem of the Invictus Games, and it talks about adversity and strength, and they just all read lines from this poem, and there's like a short video advert about it, which is a really nice thing to watch. Actually, it's quite a nice little video to see all of the famous people promoting it. So that's one thing he did, not massive. And then another thing, and you're not allowed to talk over me in this, Butler, because you probably know way more than I do about this, because I'd be honest, I didn't even care about this when I read about it. Star Wars The Force Awakens. So as you remember, when Star Wars The Force Awakens came out, there was loads of talk about people playing stormtroopers and stuff, like, oh, there's loads of hidden famous people who are playing the roles of stormtroopers and various other characters. And at the time, it was just loads of rumours, and nobody knew if it was actually true. There was, like, lots of famous people associated with playing characters in it. Apparently, Plague plays a First Order grunt, and I know you'll remember this scene, Butler, but he was sent to guard Rey, Daisy Ridley's character, on a Star Destroyer, I'm assuming. And it's the bit where... It's a good job we're not doing a Star Wars podcast. But it's the bit where she starts using her powers. So he comes in and says, tells her to do something. Oh, and she says to him, you will remove these restraints and leave the cell with the door open. And he says, I'll tighten those restraints, scavenger scum. And then she does it again, and then eventually he does it. And it's like a comedy moment in the film and a callback to the first film where Obi-Wan uses it for the first time. But anyway, so Craig said at the time that he would never bother with a cameo in Star Wars The Force Awakens. He says, why would I ever bother doing something like that? Effing hell. Play an extra in another movie. And then Simon Pegg did an interview with The Sun at some point, and he said, because they were asking all these famous people if they're in Star Wars. And he said, I wasn't a stormtrooper. Daniel Craig, he was a stormtrooper. Before adding, I shouldn't have said that to you. And it came about apparently because Spectre and The Force Awakens were being filmed at Pinewood at the same time, so it was quite easy for actors to just go, oh, I'm going to go and just be a stormtrooper in this film for, you know, half an hour. It's taken quite a cool little thing, and I imagine, I think a lot of them did it because they were fans of it. And it sounds like Craig might have been a fan, what with his love of gaming and all sorts of stuff. I bet he's a Star Wars fan. I'm just lumping gamers and Star Wars fans together there. So yeah, there would have been a short walk from each other. So yeah, so apparently he was in it, and anything else on that, Butler? I'm sure you've got some insider knowledge about him in that.
No, not really. Not much to add. I mean, a lot of people did make cameos in that film. This is probably the most memorable one of the lot. You said Simon Pegg. Simon Pegg has a proper role in the film. Actually, he's under like mountains of prosthetics as the guy who's stolen the Millennium Falcon. But yeah, I mean, it's just quite a fun little crossover, isn't it? I think, doesn't his stormtrooper have like a special designation, like is he like TK007 or something?
I don't know.
I might have missed that.
Yeah. I'm not going to rewatch it. I'm never going to rewatch it.
Hey, listen, of all the Star Wars sequel films, that one's not bad, I think.
Yeah, but it's I would watch it again if I didn't know what else was coming. It's just, it seems like a, like, you go, oh, I'm going to watch this and I really like it. Then you go, well, I'm not going to bother watching the rest of the story. So it's just, there's no point.
Well, there you go. And you disparaging gamers and nerds, like, you're the biggest nerd I know. I don't know what you're talking about. You play more video games than anyone I know.
And I like computer games and comics and stuff. Not a Star Wars fan.
Our mailbag is going to be full of complaints now.
And I also... Also, you sent a message on our group chat the other day showing us your collection of Star Wars Tazos. Says to say you're not a Star Wars fan.
I think that's because you got me into those.
Excuses.
Right. We'll pick that up on the Star Wars A to Z podcast.
I'm busy.
So, Spectre. Let's talk about Spectre. That film, like you say, was in production at Pinewood and had been announced to press at an event at Pinewood in December 2014. It was the 24th James Bond film. They announced the title along with the new cast members, Christoph Waltz, Lea Seydoux, Dave Bautista, Andrew Scott and Monica Bellucci. And then obviously Daniel Craig was returning, as was Naomi Harris, Ben Whishaw, Ralph Fiennes. Also returning was Rory Kinnear as Tanner. Sam Mendes was also returning, and Skyfall writers Neil Purvis, Rob Wade and John Logan were named as the script writers on this film. So it's time to sound the Kevin McClory klaxon. So Kevin McClory, who had been in litigation with Eon since the since helping Ian Fleming to write Thunderball, or at least come up with a plot for Thunderball in 1958, he had died in 2006. And in 2013, Dan Jack and Eon, the producers of the James Bond film, and MGM, the distributor had announced that they'd reached a settlement with the estate of Kevin McClory, which brought back everything that they hadn't been able to use back into the James Bond fold. And that included Spectre and Blofeld. So Spectre, the film, was announced, and obviously everyone knew that Blofeld and Spectre were going to be involved. Blofeld hadn't been seen in the film since Diamonds Are Forever in 1971, and obviously very hinted at in For Your Eyes Only. So this is another film beset with production issues. So John Logan had been hired to write Spectre, and it was his idea, along with Sam Mendes, to bring Spectre and Blofeld into the story. But his first draft of the script was really badly received by Eon and Sony, and so he left the project at that stage. His script was rejected, but the idea of bringing Spectre and Blofeld became like the idea that they stuck with. At this point, Jez Butterworth was brought in. We talked about Jez Butterworth on a B episode. He had polished Skyfall, but actually ended up contributing a lot more to this film this time around. So you could say a lot of the problems in this film, you know, belong to Jez Butterworth. That would be one way of perceiving it. Because this film is misjudged, let's just put it that way, I think. I don't know why they couldn't bring Blofeld back and just have him being an evil bad guy. Obviously, mm-hmm. in the course of this film, it's revealed that he's Bond's half adopted brother. I can't even remember what the connection is, but it doesn't work. Sam Mendes was also very reluctant to return as well, and the producers waited a year for him to come back, for his theatre commitments to come to an end, so that Sam Mendes could come back. And actually, when the Sony hack happened in 2014, when the Sony emails were all leaked onto the internet, it was revealed that the writers had just been like working backwards and forwards trying to crack the final third of this film. And I don't think they succeeded by the time it went to shoot. And also, it had been conceived as a two-part film. They were going to shoot two films back to back, and it ended up being condensed into just one film. So that is possibly one of the reasons why this film doesn't really work narratively. So Daniel Craig, talking to Time Out around the film's release, was asked, "Did you always plan to play Bond for a fourth time? It's been 10 years now." He said, "Well, I was contracted to do another one. That was all set up. But here at the studio, there was a real keenness to get it done as soon as possible. In fact, there was a conversation at one point that went, 'Let's film two movies back to back.' And I went, 'You're out of your effing minds,' in the nicest way possible. They're just too big." And talking of big, Spectre is estimated to have cost somewhere in the region of $245 to $300 million to make. The most expensive Bond film of all time, and also one of the most expensive films of all time, full stop. It made $880 million worldwide, which makes it a lower earner than Skyfall. I think they were hoping for another billion-dollar movie, but it was still the sixth highest grossing film of 2015, and had the second largest unadjusted total for the series after Skyfall. On Rotten Tomatoes, it has an approval rating of 63%, which indicates that it's not that bad, but it's not beloved by fans, let's just put it that way. To support, and we'll go into this in much more greater detail when we do S for Spectre way down the line. As part of the promotional cycle for this film, he did another Heineken advert, and this one, I have to say, is brilliant, and it's called The Chase, and it's directed by someone called Tom Kuntz. And again, he works for the agency, or he was working for on behalf of the agency, Vyden Kennedy Amsterdam. Have you seen this one, either of you two?
No.
This is Daniel Craig doing a Roger Moore Bond film, basically. It's set on a lake, and Bond steals a speedboat, and as he sets off on the speedboat to get away from the bad guys, there's a lady attached on water skis at the back. So he's driving along the lake, and she goes on an adventure on her own, being dragged through like a wedding. There's a bit where she flies down the aisle of a wedding and the rope goes over knick-knack, and he's sat in the wedding audience. And there's bits where she picks up a tray of beers and then like gives them to the henchmen. And in the end, she helps Bond to defeat the bad guy right at the end. It's absolutely brilliant.
Should have got him to do Spectre.
Yeah. In the book, The Lost Adventures of James Bond, which is excellent, by the way, by Mark Edlitz, he interviewed the director and he asked him what it was like to work with Daniel Craig. He said he was lovely. He was very professional, very respectful. He had clear notions of what his character would do, and none of it was rooted in anything but productivity and consistency. So this is him, Daniel Craig, playing Bond again and being very protective of the character. But famously, after the film came out, or when the film came out, he did an interview with Time Out, and they asked him, can you imagine doing another Bond movie? And he said, now, I'd rather break this glass and slash my wrists. No, not at the moment, not at all. That's fine, I'm over it at the moment, we're done. All I want to do is move on. And they asked him a follow-up question, you want to move on from Bond for good? And he said, I haven't given it any thought for at least a year or two. I don't want to think about it. I don't know what the next step is. I've no idea. Not because I'm trying to be cagey. Who the F knows? At the moment, we've done it. I'm not in discussion with anybody about anything. If I did another Bond movie, it would only be for the money. So, this I think possibly this is where a lot of dissatisfaction from James Bond fans with Daniel Craig stems from. This attitude that, you know, he's over it. I think he has spoken since then and said, you know, it was a bit of a knee-jerk reaction to... Yeah. Having finished.
I've heard other people say that as well.
Yeah.
That if you've just done a film, especially a big film like this, you really do hate it because it's so much work and then you don't want to do one again. It takes a bit of time to warm to it again.
Yeah, and bear in mind, we're talking about a film that was announced in December 2014 and released the following autumn. That is mad. That's a mad time to get a $300 million movie made and released. It must have been hard work. And actually, when asked about it, Martin Campbell said, Daniel always makes remarks like that. He said, excuse me, you've just earned $100 million off this effing movie. It's just very hard work for him and he gets beaten up. But he's 120% committed to these movies and will remain that way until he stops doing them. So that's Spectre. And again, we'll talk about that film more in more depth later on.
Now for some comic relief. Literally, in 2007, he starred as himself in a Catherine Tate sketch. She plays one of, I assume it's one of her regular characters called Elaine Figgis.
Nobody here knows.
We talked about this briefly last time, didn't we?
Yeah. So he plays... He's a boyfriend that this character Elaine Figgis has got, and she doesn't believe he is who he says he is, that he's an actor and that he's a pretty big deal. And as the sketch goes on, he grows more and more attached to her and eventually falls in love with her, but she is just not interested. That's the whole premise of the sketch. And they break up at the end and he rides off on a tandem bike.
I think you've covered all the jokes in it as well, so yeah, good.
Oh, apart from the fact that Daniel Craig drinks Nuki Brown.
That's clever, that bit.
But fear not, because he did more comic relief in 2015. This was a mockumentary style behind the scenes look at the voice of James Bond. So it's revealed that Daniel Craig's voice is of a small girl. That's the premise of the bit. It features Roger Moore, who also has his voice changed. Rory Kinnear, Sam Mendes, Naomi Harris, Ben Whishaw, Michael G. Wilson, they all, you know, play themselves in this, like wanting to keep this a secret, that this is how they do it. And they get someone to dub Daniel Craig's voice so that he sounds like Bond. And the big reveal is that it's Alan Carr who does the thing.
I haven't seen that one.
Yeah, I watched it.
Did you laugh?
No. But it's for charity, isn't it?
It's for charity, yeah. Although I think there's two ways of looking at this. Because I always think, well, it is for charity, so it doesn't matter. But it still should be funny. Because that's the point of the show.
Yeah. But it's always good to see Roger Moore, isn't it? So that's a win for me.
Oh, exactly.
They really should have used Moore for many, many more.
I know. They wasted Moore in this, but it's good to see him. Yeah.
I'd say it would have been good. A Partridge Craig comic relief.
Mm.
That would have been, would have been, the options there would have been fantastic.
Mm. But there is another one coming up, isn't there? So I look forward to hearing about that.
Okay, more plays and films from Craig. In 2016 and 2017, he played in the off-Broadway show Othello. It's a modern production of the Shakespeare play, New York Theatre Workshop. It starred David Oyelowo.
David Oyelowo.
That's it. That's it. As the main character, and Craig as Iago. I don't find out much about this. It's just a Shakespeare play. But apparently it was, apparently Craig was a chilling portrayal of Iago. That's all I'm going to do on that. Next. I couldn't find much else about it. We haven't got a lot of time. Then in 2017, he starred in Logan Lucky. I've got a bit more about this one, which is an American heist comedy. And we all love heist comedies, don't we? It was directed by Steven Soderbergh. And apparently Soderbergh came out of retirement to direct the film, and he distributed it independently through his own company because he was so keen on doing it. Stars Channing Tatum. Tatum.
What's your pronunciation?
I don't know what's going on. It's because I've been in Lincolnshire for a week. Adam Driver.
Have you ever listened to other people talking before?
Daniel Craig, obviously. Seth MacFarlane, Katie Holmes, Hilary Swank, Catherine Waterston, and Sebastian Stan. And it's about the Logan family and an attempt to rob the Charlotte Motor Speedway whilst avoiding security officers and the FBI. It grossed $48 million worldwide and got pretty good reviews in general. And Craig's character, he plays like an expert at robbing things, and they try and get him, I think they break him out of prison or something. But his character, and it's interesting, I've never seen him play a character that's so far away from what he normally plays. When doing this research, we've gone through a lot of these films, he does play a very similar character in a lot of them. I know the character is different, but the way he plays it is quite similar. It's like, but this one is very different. So if it just, I don't know.
It's very broad.
It's
a very broad comedy performance, isn't it?
Yes, and I was quite surprised when I saw it. It's quite far removed from what you normally expect from him. So have you seen it?
I have. Yeah, I don't think it was very good.
Is it actually good?
No, I didn't like it. It was too. It's very mannered. It's kind of like Ocean's 11, but with hillbillies.
Well, it's made by this, Steven Soderbergh,
yeah,
isn't it?
Same director. And it's quite an obnoxious film. I thought it was quite an obnoxious film, but I'm sure it's got its fans out.
I just can't look at heist films now. You watch the episode of Rick and Morty where they make fun of heist films?
Yeah.
And every time I see a trailer for a new one, I just can't watch them now because it is just so tick-in-the-box heist-style films. So that was Logan Lucky. And then in 2017, he went a little bit more artistic with the film Kings. And that's a film he starred in with Halle Berry. She plays a single mother who's got 8 adopted children in South Los Angeles. And Craig plays Obi, who is the only white man in the neighborhood. And it's set during the Rodney King riots. So obviously all her kids are involved in the riots in some shape or another. And he becomes involved with the family to, I don't know, they to kind of survive these riots. It was shown at quite a lot of film festivals, actually. It was at the 2017 Toronto, it premiered at the 2017 Toronto International Film Festival. It was part of Stockholm's International Film Festival, and it was at the Torino Film Festival in Italy. So you can see what they were kind of aiming for. He's made a decision to star in it's basically an attempt at winning awards. It's a film that's got a bit of depth to it. On Rotten Tomatoes, it's got an approval rating of 13%, and an average rating of 3.5 out of 10. The critical consensus from the site says that Kings has good intentions, a talented cast, and the basis for an incredible fact-based story. Unfortunately, they don't amount to much more than a missed opportunity. And on Metacritic, the film has a weighted score of 34 out of 100. So, and it's received generally unfavourable reviews.
Ouch. I hadn't even heard of that one. And like, no, I've been a film journalist for the last 10 years. I've never even heard of it.
Yeah, if you look at the trailer, it looks like you can see what they're going for. It's a pitch at making a film that's going to win awards. It looks like that sort of thing, and it from the trailer it looks like it could do, but obviously the film's actually not as good as how it appears on the trailer.
Apparently, it made $825,000, which is not great.
Awkward. Yeah.
But so we've got No Time to Die coming out this year, 2021, when we're recording this. But this film was supposed to come out in 2019. So it would have been not long after, you know, Logan Lucky and Kings. But obviously, we know that that didn't happen. First of all, because Danny Boyle signed on to do the film and then quit the project, which delayed it at least one of the first few times it was delayed. And so, in that time when the film was delayed, this allowed Daniel Craig to star in what many would consider to be his best film in years beyond Bond, which is a film called Knives Out. So Daniel Craig signed up to star in the film from Rian Johnson, who had been inspired by Agatha Christie novels. It's an old-fashioned, old-school whodunit, and it's got an all-star cast: Chris Evans, Jamie Lee Curtis, Michael Shannon, Christopher Plummer, Lakeith Stanfield, Tony Collette, Ana de Armas. And Rian Johnson said he came up with the idea after breaking out with his first film, 2005's Brick, which is fantastic, by the way. But he didn't start work on it until 2018, after he'd released Star Wars: The Last Jedi, which we won't discuss here. So Daniel Craig had been on Rian Johnson's wish list for the lead role as Benoit Blanc, the detective. But he just assumed that there was no way that he would get him because he was obviously within the Bond time frame. But all of a sudden he had an opening. It was going to be a very short production, 8 weeks. And so Daniel was able to slot it into his schedule because of Danny Boyle's departure. So Ram Bergman, who is the producer on the film and is the producer that always works with Rian Johnson, he said, "We'd been talking about Daniel Craig, and then literally a few days later, Rian was sitting with Daniel, and then Daniel was in the film. I think he was really excited to jump in and have fun with this totally different type of character. And we talked about just then Logan Lucky, him playing this deep south sort of hillbilly. This is a very left field role for Daniel Craig as well in Knives Out. He plays this southern, real thick southern accent, like gentleman detective." And in the script, Rian Johnson had actually written that it would be his accent would have the gentlest of southern lilt. And Daniel Craig said, "I may not have done that, but I went for it. He wanted something that placed him, that separated him from the rest of the characters, kind of maybe leaves him open for ridicule. And Rian Johnson said, "He's great as Bond. I'd seen him in other things as well over the years. Obviously, it was Logan Lucky recently where you see that he's willing to kind of have fun and go a little wackier. And I'd seen him on the stage. I knew that he was a great actor, and also I got the sense he was really looking forward to the opportunity to have some fun. So that, much more than the idea of somehow playing off of how the public perceives him, was the motivation. I just got the sense that he was ready to really cut loose and play with this one. And he did. And I love this film. I don't know what you two think about it."
Yeah, I agree. Really like
it. Fantastic. Yeah.
And he's great. He is really good in this film. It's a very funny performance. I think, you know, you may mock him for being dour and, you know, a humourless individual. But actually, I think you see this film shows he does have a really good sense of humour when he's given the opportunity to really, you know, cut loose. And I guess he's able to at this stage in his career, right? He's in his 50s. He's able to, doesn't have to worry too much about his image. He's not after sort of leading man action roles anymore.
Yeah. He talks a bit about, by this point he knows that he's finishing with Bond as well. And he just has this enormous feeling of freedom and he feels a lot more relaxed about the roles he's doing. So you can see that with Knives Out, feels like he's having more fun. He's doing something that he's, it just looks like he's enjoying it when he's doing it.
Yeah.
But what I like about Knives Out is that that genre is a genre that was very difficult to do. And it used to be the, one of the biggest genres. It's like a Western genre, the old spy whodunit type things. And it is almost, and then I know Murder on the Orient Express and some other ones have tried to do it, and they are good, but they're quite big scale. Whereas this is quite a small scale, simple. Mm. It's almost like a play. It's and it's really nice that I'm not sure what the how much it actually made, but I know it's very, very popular.
Well, I mean, it was made, like I said, 8 weeks, very low budget, and it took $311 million at the box office. Wow. Deadline in their annual sort of box office hits of the year estimated Goose. That it had made $82 million in profit, which is just massive. And it was for Lionsgate, a very small studio in Hollywood. And so,
great choice for Craig. It's one of the best choices of his career by a long shot.
Yeah, absolutely. And obviously, we'll talk about it in a second, but it turns out it's going to become a very lucrative property for him down the line as
Bond.
Well. Yeah, could be. But talking of his new Bond, he has got a new Bond film coming out.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that.
Yeah, No Time to Die, the 25th Bond, which I counted earlier, it's been delayed 6 times.
Wow.
That's incredible, isn't it? For many different reasons, you know, change of director, injury to Daniel Craig, and of course the pandemic. So hopefully, I mean, it's set for release on September the 30th, and hopefully that will set, you know, so he's set in
I don't want to get my hopes up.
No, there's no point even saying, but maybe you're listening to this now and it has been released. Lucky you. So it's directed,
well, maybe unlucky you.
Directed by Cary Fukunaga, and it's got Rami Malek and Lashana Lynch, and then cast members coming back. You've obviously got Daniel Craig, Lea Seydoux, Ben Whishaw, Naomi Harris, Jeffrey Wright, Christoph Waltz, and Ralph Fiennes. This is his swan song, which we're all eager to see. And in terms of budget, it's floating, estimated 250 to 300 million. And this is because of the ever increasing costs of the delay. It's costing so much, lost from the marketing that they've just wasted. And it's costing millions just the longer it sat there gathering dust. So that's incredible, really. So in May 2016, it was reported that Daniel Craig had been offered $100 million to do 2 more Bond films from that was MGM that put that offer down. And he turned it down. And so they came back with another offer, $150 million for the next 2. And again, that was turned down.
Incredible. That's quite a big jump. You think you go, well, what about 102 million?
And then he confirmed in August 2017 that he would reprise the role of Bond. And it's reported that he's going to be paid $25 million for this. So quite a come down from that huge offer. Mm.
I'd still take it, though.
Yeah, big time. And so he came back because he felt that there was loose ends to tie up, and he wanted to conclude this whole arc that he has built within the Bond world. And he said, "This is my last movie. I've kept my mouth shut before, and I've stayed out of it, and I've respected it, and I've regretted that I did." And so he was instrumental in getting Phoebe Waller-Bridge to join the writing team. Obviously, we've discussed issues of Quantum of Solace and Spectre, and this is what he's referring to. Before, he's just sort of, well, Quantum of Solace, he was brought on board to sort of chip in, but obviously he's passionate about making something with a good end result. And he said, "I've been very forceful in meetings and often way too blunt and probably completely rude, but I'm like, we're here, come on. And I always say sorry." So he's ruffled some feathers, but like I said, we haven't seen it. Hopefully he's ruffled the right feathers.
Well, you can't make an omelette.
That's true. And then after the last shot at Pinewood, when they'd finally wrapped, it was all very emotional. And the director said, typically I'm not an emotional person on sets, but there was sort of a pulsing feeling to that day. So it was a night shoot, and they'd all finished it. It wrapped early, so Daniel Craig was supposed to say a few words. He said, I had the whole thing kind of put together in my head, what I wanted to say, and just couldn't get it out. And so he's very, very emotional at this point. Barbara Broccoli said, we knew it was a monumental moment. There wasn't a dry eye, to be honest. I was a mess. I was a complete and utter mess. And Michael G. Wilson said that all the crew were hanging around. They just didn't want it to be the end. And he said, it's night shooting. Everybody usually runs off. And they were just talking to each other and shaking hands. And it was as if they knew it had to end, but they didn't like the idea. So at the time of, there was an edit available for Daniel Craig to watch. And he was allowed to invite people along to watch, but he didn't. He just wanted to watch it alone. He said, I just need to be on my own, kind of experiencing it. The first few minutes are always unbearable. Why am I standing like that? What am I doing? He said, I think it works. So hallelujah. So he's seen it and he thinks it works. So let's hope his judgment is good.
Well, I'd be very worried if he said, I've seen it. Not very good. Didn't like it.
Bit ropey.
Not as good as Quantum.
And then in April 2021, when it got delayed to April 2021, he defended the decision. He said, this thing, referring to the virus, he said, this thing is just bigger than all of us. We just want people to go and see this movie in the right way, in a safe way. Cinemas all around the world are closed at the moment. We want to release the movie at the same time all around the world, and this isn't the right time. Yeah, absolutely huge. A lot of the industry is pinning their hopes on this, especially in the UK, where cinema chain Cineworld really were banking on this to kickstart the cinema goers, coming through the doors again. And in terms of Bond, he said, I've given it everything I can. I'm so glad that I came back and I did this last one. We have had lots of loose threads we haven't tied up. The story just didn't feel complete. I needed a break. I truly admitted it. I just needed to get my head away from it all for a while. And once I had, we started talking about storylines and things we could do and where we could take it. And his advice for the next Bond is, don't F it up. It is a beautiful, amazing thing. So, yeah, there you are. Well, we haven't seen it, so we can't even talk about what we think of it.
The proof will be in the pudding, won't it? I like the trailers. I think the trailers are really good. I think it looks like it's going to be a visually interesting film. I think Cary Fukunaga brings a lot of his own visual style to this. Mm. I love Rami Malek. It'll be interesting to see how the characters from the previous film tie into it. Blofeld and Madeleine Swann, because I think they'll be a big part. There's obviously a lot of rumours about what that happens in the film. Bond, we know that Bond has retired at the start of it. So him coming out of a retirement gives us sort of, something new with Bond. He's been replaced by another 00 agent in the field. Lashana Lynch's character. So there's a lot of, interesting dynamics at play, and we'll find out when it comes out in September, but I can't wait.
I do worry that the longer it's going to have to be fantastic.
There's more resting on this than any Bond film that's ever, maybe even more than GoldenEye now.
We've waited as long as it's been 6 years since the last one. That was the record, wasn't it, from GoldenEye, from License to Kill to
and
GoldenEye.
After Spectre, it's got to do the job.
But then we've got a reboot on the horizon, right? If it's not that good, they'll just reboot it, and then that becomes a whole new thing in itself, right? So it's fine. However good this film is, the future of Bond is secured. Well, at least
I'd say the bit that I'm not, because we've waited so long for No Time to Die. I can't wait for it. But the thing I'm more excited about is finding out who the new Bond is, and that's why I'm annoyed about the delay, because I'm looking forward to that. But yeah.
But I mean, the same with Daniel Craig. I assume he wants to move on with his career. And this is just sort of, it's lingering.
He's going to have to do a load more marketing stuff,
exactly.
Isn't he?
Yeah.
Speaking of which, you mentioned that this is the last time he's playing Bond, but it wasn't, because he's played Bond another couple of times as well since finishing filming on No Time to Die. He was back again in 2020 for another Saturday Night Live. I watched all of these. They were pretty much of the same, really. He plays various characters. I think he's in about 8 sketches throughout the show. And they're a bit of a... I'd say they're a mixed bag, but I don't think I found one that I found in any way enjoyable. As you can probably tell, I'm not a fan of SNL at all after about 1990. So I'm not going to go into too much depth with that. I think he plays the Bond character maybe once in one of those... skits, but then he just plays other characters throughout the whole thing, and he's in a lot of it, and sometimes he's a very small character and he's barely even in it, but he's in that quite a lot, and that's obviously a marketing thing, which annoyingly he probably put a lot of effort into, and that's way back in 2020 now, so
it was in like March, wasn't it, just before the pandemic hit, wasn't it,
which has got to be really annoying April last year, because that would have taken him ages to do all that and get involved in all that, bit of a difficult one, so who knows if he might end up doing another one or something like that for the next final release of it. And then another thing, and Comic Relief back again, and I'll say this again, Comic Relief does amazing work for charity and it's a fantastic thing, but dear God, that was this was an awful, awful sketch. As we know, last year obviously Comic Relief was a significantly limited affair because they couldn't have people in a studio. They couldn't do lots of filming and things. So it was, I think it only lasted about 2-3 hours this year, didn't it?
This year it was March.
This year, yes, this year. So it went on to about 10 o'clock or something.
Yeah.
But the sketch was, what's her face again?
Catherine Tate.
Playing Nan, who we've probably all seen a distance but never actually actively watched in too much detail. She's cleaning M's office, and he comes on the laptop to speak to M and ends up speaking to Nan. She makes some very... I mean, he's obviously not actually talking to her. He's just recorded a few lines separately and then it's been edited together later. She makes some very simple, boring jokes about him being a confirmed bachelor. And I can't even... I didn't even rewatch it for this because I didn't want to. I watched a little bit of it, but it's just not very good, is it? That's it. That was him back for Comic Relief. Probably a low point in terms of my
which
view
could
on
be
it.
The last time he ever plays James Bond for that one sketch. So interesting way to go out.
I suppose the whole thing about Comic Relief is that it's got to appeal to everyone, hasn't it? And Catherine Tate's Nan is probably quite a popular character with
broad
general
appeal.
Public, but They could have done something smart with him. You got access to Daniel Craig for something. There's loads of people you could work with. So there you go. That's the last time. Hopefully, maybe you'll do another SNL. Who knows? But I still think they should do another one with Alan Partridge interviewing about Bond. I think that would have been perfect. So then we've got. Then move on to the Knives Out sequel deal, and obviously this is a very exciting thing coming up, and has been in stories for quite a while about what's happening with it. And in March 2021, it was reported that Netflix had agreed to pay over $450 million for the rights to two sequels to be written and directed by Rian Johnson. Is that right, Butler?
That's right. Number? Something like that.
Yeah. So obviously, Craig's going to be reprising his role as Detective Benoit Blanc. And filming is actually starting, I think, on Friday this week, from what I read.
Yeah, I mean, this will be released in the future, but it's happening right now, isn't it?
Yeah, so we should start seeing some set photos and stuff soon, I should imagine. But obviously, he's not playing... It's not the same family. It's not the same story. He's just a detective that goes around solving various crimes. So in this next one, it's signed up to do the follow-ups. I don't know if they're all in the next one or they're in multiple films, but Dave Bautista, Edward Norton, Janelle Monáe, Catherine Hahn, Leslie Odom Jr. and Kate Hudson have all signed on to the sequel in undisclosed roles. And then more recently, Madeline Klein and Jessica Henwick have been added to the cast. So that's all sounding pretty exciting. And Johnson, also the, what's his name?
Ryan Johnson.
Ryan Johnson has been signed on as well, of course, to do them.
Well, he's the writer-director, so, isn't he?
Yes, yeah. And obviously he's done a fantastic job with the first one, so that's good that they've got him. And it certainly sounds like, and from what I've seen, I think that it's kind of a passion project for him, isn't it? It's like his idea and his.
Yeah, I think that was the idea, that he was the writer and creator, and so then they took the sequels, they, you know, pitching it around all the different studios and sold it to the highest bidder for these two sequels, because as we saw, the first one made so much profit.
Yeah.
And but the rumours are, or the specifics are, that of the deal are, it's going to make Ryan Johnson, Daniel Craig and the producer Ron Bergman very, very rich. They're standing to make like something crazy, like $50 million each from the deal.
Incredible.
Which is like Robert Downey Jr. in Avengers level deal. That's crazy money.
That's what you do when you get these big Netflix deals and stuff, because they just generate so much money in an easy way. It's so countable. But that's the thing, that when we first heard about this, instantly my thought was, oh, I don't want them to go to Netflix. I want them to be big cinema films again. I don't want them to be turned into these Netflix ones. What are your views on them going to Netflix?
Well, I think Netflix actually does release them theatrically as well, so they'll get limited theatrical releases. I'm not a huge fan of... I always think, no disrespect to Netflix, but if a film's going straight to streaming, then it's of limited quality. But
That's always my first thought. What's wrong with it?
Yeah.
Yes. What I always think about films that go straight to streaming is that it's very hard to tell if people really did watch them. People will have the one in the house, they're doing other stuff, they've got mum when they're doing work, these kind of things. So you get these amazing viewing figures and you say, wow, it's been watched by millions of people.
But then the Netflix doesn't actually reveal real data. It says, you know, it'll tell people, oh, 35 million households have watched this, but actually, you're right, they don't tell you, have they watched the whole thing from start to finish?
Yeah.
Or have they just watched 30 seconds of it?
It will always sound like that. It will sound like it's wonderfully successful, but I don't know. I there must be an effect it has on, or could have an effect on the quality and stuff when it doesn't go, when it's not as accountable as it is on when it goes to the cinema.
Well, the first one won Oscars, didn't it? I think was it Best Original Screenplay or something, or at least it was nominated for. So maybe it's an awards play from Netflix as well. But they've spent a lot of money on these sequels. So,
but maybe they will distribute it wider than they have before.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, they might do. But yeah, I mean, that's Daniel Craig. That's the future for Daniel Craig. I'm interested to see where he does go from here in terms of the roles that he goes into post-Bond. To me, it seems like he had that purple patch where he was doing, you know, David Fincher, Tintin, all these amazing films. But that really tailed out over the last sort of 10 years. And he hasn't made that many films. And I wonder whether he's sort of stepping back from it. He seems like a guy who was very uncomfortable with the level of fame, and now he's sort of stepping back from it, and whether he'll actively be seeking out film roles or a premium box set TV show. Who knows? The world is his oyster now. I get the sense that he's happily married with his young child and happy to take a back seat now.
GQ article that I think we all read, the interview with him, he does say something interesting, that when he was doing No Time to Die, he almost had like a realization that he's got a new child now, he's got all these other things to do, and he just can't, you know, give everything he's got to films like this anymore. So it's definitely he's had a pretty damn good run, and he sounds like he's been a ridiculously busy man for a lot of his life. So yeah, it's definitely it feels like the ball's in his court a bit now. But Knives Out just seems like the perfect way to do that, because it
Actually, I didn't mention it, but I think Spectre was the first time that a James Bond actor was listed as a producer on the films. And so he's a producer as well now on Spectre and No Time to Die. And that will have a payday associated with it as well. Mm. So not only is he getting bumper wages to play Bond, he's also now producing the films and generating bumper paydays for himself beyond Bond. So he's just set up for life now. He can do what he wants, really.
Yeah.
But do you think, like, the Daniel Craig era will be looked back on fondly once he departs?
Depends, doesn't it? But on No Time to Die. Yeah, a lot resting on that film.
I think Casino Royale and Skyfall will always be considered classics.
Yeah, yeah, they're definitely... I mean, they're still... They're almost timeless, I think. Definitely Casino Royale is timeless, I think, for me. I think that's going to be classed as a classic for a very long time. I think Skyfall may age badly in the future. I think it's got a lot of elements to it which are very much based in the time zone it's in. But Casino Royale seems to be completely... like where it's set is irrelevant. You could set that in the 60s and it'd still just be such as good a film.
I think like Bond fans are like starting to appreciate Quantum of Solace more. I think that's like, you know, a bit of a reach, but like I think it'll be looked back on, say, like a film like Diamonds Are Forever. It'll have its supporters and people will be able to watch it. I mean, I can watch it, it's fine. It's just, you know, it feels like sort of almost half a film. It's like fighting to be the film, whereas Spectre's like one and a half films fighting to be one.
I'll be honest, I think I'm probably more likely to watch Quantum than Spectre in the choice.
Shall we wrap things up there then?
Yes. Yeah.
So that concludes our Daniel Craig specials. We will have one more episode talking about Daniel Craig. We're going to get a guest on to talk about their encounters with Daniel Craig, someone who has met Daniel Craig on a number of occasions and interviewed him and sort of crossed paths with him. So that's going to be very exciting to listen to, I think. And then beyond that, we're moving on to the letter D, finally.
Oh, wow.
What a treat.
The letter D is just, it's epic. You know, we've got so many different characters and creatives, just to name a few. Roald Dahl.
Cut to the chase. How long until Dalton?
Dalton is going to be it's only going to be a couple of episodes away, and we're going to be talking about Timothy Dalton and his era. And then we've also got, you know, Diamonds Are Forever, Die Another Day, Dr. No, Tracy DiVincenzo, one of my favourite Bond girls, Domino to look forward to.
Oh, nice. Yeah. Good.
So that's the letter D. And then beyond that, you know, we're romping through the alphabet then. So please join us as our journey into the world of James Bond continues. But how can people get a hold of us if they want to email us?
On email, it's podcast@jamesbondatoz.co.uk.
And if they want to hit us up on the socials?
You can hit us up on Insta, Facebook. I was going to say MySpace. You can't, not on MySpace, not yet. at James Bond A to Z. Also Twitter. That's the one, not MySpace.
Yes. Thank you very much for listening. If you've enjoyed this, please leave us a review on Apple Podcasts and give us a 5-star rating on there as well, and share the podcast with your friends and families and henchmen.
If they like James Bond.
There's something here for everyone, you know.
Yeah. Is there something for everyone?
Maybe not Star Wars fans, because they're...
I've alienated all of them.
Yeah, you've done that, yeah.
Yeah, or gamers. yes, so James Bond, the James Bond A to Z podcast will return.
Thanks a lot.
Ciao.
The James Bond A to Z podcast features Tom Butler, Brendan Duffy, and Tom Wheatley. The podcast was produced by Tom Wheatley, with music by Tom Ingemels, and artwork supplied by Helen Dolly.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.